This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
You are listening to The Morning Run with Shazana, Xiaoning and Philip. We are talking about raising household income. And in our ongoing coverage of the 12th Malaysia Plan, today we're looking at the ambitious target of raising the average household income to 10,000 ringgit per month by 2025. And this is up from about 7,000 ringgit currently, according to the latest figures from the Department of Statistics Malaysia.
But critics remain sceptical about whether this can be achieved. By the way, it was also not achieved during the 11 Malaysia Plan. Now, especially since between 2016 and 2020, the increase in household income was less than 2,000 ringgit. So our opposition leader, Dato Sri Anwar Ibrahim, chimed in as well, asking if this was a realistic goal after taking into account the poverty rate, the number of retrenchments and the rate of development that is expected to be slow for at least the next 1 or 2 years.
So to talk us through whether this is a viable target and the issue, the trends in household incomes overall, we're speaking to Calvin Cheng, analyst in the economics program at the Institute of Strategic and International Studies, or ISIS Malaysia. Good morning, Calvin. Thanks for joining us today. So there were some eyebrows raised over the government's target in the 12th MP to raise household income to 10,000 ringgit by 2025. What do you think? Is this a realistic projection?
Well, first of all, good morning. And I've said this before, I think, on Malay Mail, but in a nutshell, my view is that household incomes are inherently, you know, hard to predict. They're heavily dependent on a multitude of different factors, like GDP, the pace of recovery of labor markets, you know, wage growth, and so forth. And as you've mentioned, back in the original 2015-11 Malaysia Plan, the target for the average Malay household income was about 10,540 by 2020. And actual figures are about 33% lower than the target. So for the 12th Malaysia Plan, we're actually rehashing that same 10,000 ringgit target more than 5 years later. So all this is to show that predicting average household incomes, even 5 years ahead, is challenging, right? Mm. But that said, in my view, the target for 10,000 ringgit average monthly household income is very optimistic. Mean to say that while it's not completely impossible, it is optimistic, and judging from current economic conditions, a bit unrealistic. Here's why, right? So rough estimates, assuming monthly household income recovers to pre-crisis levels by next year, household incomes will still need to grow by about 8.2% steadily every single year for us to reach that 10,000 ringgit target by 2025.
Mm.
And just for comparison, average annual growth for monthly household income over the 10 years from 2009 to 2019 is only about 7%.
Mm. I know this is still a pretty blue sky scenario, but what realistically does need to go into this plan? I mean, to make the 2025 goal achievable?
Well, first of all, I would say that median household incomes instead of average household incomes under the 12th Malaysia Plan would be a bit of a better target to set our sights towards, just because in terms of its statistical properties, the median will be less influenced by outliers, such as, for instance, growth in the top 1% of wage earners in the income distribution. So the median will just be less influenced by that as compared to the average or the mean. But ultimately, if raising household income is a target, right, we need to understand that in a typical Malaysian household, about 80% of total household income is made out of labor income, or wages and salaries. And then the remaining 20% is made out of investment income and government assistance. So to me, this means that the largest component in the recipe for household income growth would be wage growth, right? And as such, increasing the pace of wage growth will directly lead to higher household incomes. So now then, going back to your question on how do we achieve those targets, or what was the plan, right? We have to instead ask the question, what increases wage growth? How do we get wages across the board, but particularly in the lower end of the scale to grow quicker? And there is, of course, no clear-cut answer to achieving high wage growth. But we know from the research that a few broad policy actions that do work, right? And very broadly, the first thing is encouraging, quote-unquote, high road or high standard employment. And the key to this is higher labor standards, right? We need to raise our labor standards, strengthen worker rights for collective bargaining, and improve implementation of minimum wages. A few just to put it out there. And the second thing is employment and the workforce, right? We need to ensure that every worker in Malaysia who wants to work can, you know, are able to work and find a job, and we higher employment population ratios overall. And further, I guess, to enable wage growth to be, you know, broader based, we also need to dismantle things like ethnic and gender inequalities in Malaysia's workforce and society, and increase female labor force participation and so forth. But these are, of course, just broad goals. Implementation of specific policies would be a, you know, whole other thing.
I mean, you were saying just now that there was a potential solution to raise the national minimum wage. We are running this as a poll as well. Do you think it's time to raise it in this budget 2022, and how much should it be increased to?
Well, I think that it's not just about raising it. It's about improving it overall. So there are some other ways to improve it without raising it, though that's a completely different question. So one of the ways is to enforce hourly minimum wages instead of the monthly minimum wages across all sectors. And this would do the job of facilitating equal treatment between you know, full-time and part-time employees. Additionally, rather than raising it wholesale in nationwide, I think minimum wages need to account for regional variations in living costs and wage levels across Peninsula Malaysia, right? So I think that implementing regional minimum wages would allow, you know, modestly higher minimum wages in urban sectors like the Klang Valley. So raising it in higher earning centers like the Klang Valley, whilst reducing the negative impacts of a too high minimum wage in, you know, lower wage regions like Kelantan, for example.
And you did speak about jobs earlier, Calvin. And one of the pledges made by the government in the 12th MP is to create 500,000 jobs this year, as well as limit the hiring of foreign labor to increase employment opportunities for locals. I mean, what do you make of this? Is this projection, is this pledge realistic, really? Or is it just words?
Right. So, well, initially when I heard this, I thought, you know, there's no way that creating 500,000 jobs in a single year would be anywhere near achievable target, you know, because if you look at annual job creation data from the quarterly employment statistics releases, you would see that each year since the start of data collection, about 100,000 or 150,000 jobs are created every year. You know, this is pre-pandemic, right? So 500,000 jobs created in a year would be 4 to 5 times of that, right? So I thought, you know, no, there's no way that's likely, right? Especially in a period of high labor market slack. But then I came across a newspaper article from a couple of weeks ago where the Prime Minister announced that the objective of creating, you know, 500,000 jobs is close to realization, with about 75% of the target already met. So I actually really don't even know how this is or how it is achieved. You know, even 75% of that target will amount to about 3 times the average job creation in a typical non-pandemic year over the past decade. So yeah, I'm not too sure, but my guess is that this 500,000 is actually an estimated number of jobs pledged to be created by companies over a period of a few years, right? And if we look at the latest employment statistics for the first half of 2021, I estimate that we're actually on track for only less than 100,000 jobs created this year based on the quarterly employment statistics. So really, again, not too sure. I doubt these 500 jobs will be reflected in the quarterly employment data, but you know, I could be wrong here.
What about the hiring limits for foreign labor though, Calvin? Does that actually help household incomes? I mean, when you put a cap of 15%? Is it too simplistic to look at things like that?
Well, hiring cuts for foreign labor isn't an area that I look at particularly, but I don't think they will have a large effect on raising household incomes. I think, as I mentioned, largest component of household income is labor income. And I think that the fastest way to increase wage growth is raising our labor standards and increasing enforcement of labor standards, particularly in minimum wages and in worker rights.
I just want to get your thoughts about social protection. You know, a lot has been said recently, especially with gig work and all that so forth. And I think I really laud your solution to basically break the minimum wage to per hour. What's your thought about the work and efforts so far to revamp our social protection system to date?
Well, I think we're talking about it in a sort of RMK 12 or 12 Malaysia Plan context, right? And I think there's a lot of mention of social protection in the 12 Malaysia Plan. A lot of acknowledgement that our existing system, you know, has weaknesses in coverage, you know, targeting and adequacy. And there are parts in the 12th Malaysia Plan, if you're talking about current efforts, there are parts in the 12th Malaysia Plan that do talk about expanding social protection schemes to cover workers in the informal sector, including sections that talk about gig workers, strengthening protections for them, and sections that talk about streamlining of social assistance, something that many people, including myself, talked about, and also things about improving active labor market policies and accessibility to lifelong learning programs. And I think these are all great aspirations. But in the Tough Malaysia Plan context, seeing as this is a plan for the next 5 years, I thought it was a bit lacking in terms of stronger, bolder, more upfront commitments to the formulation of a real integrated national social protection system, that is accessible, adequate, modern. But the larger issue, in my view, is that besides these small tidbits, there's alarmingly little concrete policy action on social protection outlined in the Tough Malaysia Plan. So there are all these aspirations, but there are very little concrete policy action, right? Except for maybe a couple of things with the proposed merging of the MySVC and such. And unfortunately, all this is to say that there's still a lot more that could be done in this plan in terms of social protection.
All right, Kelvin, thanks for taking the time to speak with us today. That was Kelvin Cheng, analyst in the economics program at ISIS Malaysia, talking to us about trends in household income and whether the projections of the 12th Malaysia Plan are realistic in our economic situation. Interesting conversation there. He mentioned the inadequate social protection pledges in the 12th Malaysia Plan. I just want to draw your attention to a breakfast grill that I had last week on the International Day of Older Persons with Hawati Abdul Hamid of KRI, Khazana Research Institute, and also the president of the National Association of Senior Citizens Organizations Malaysia. Check it out on our podcast. That was quite an interesting and illuminating conversation on how to strengthen social protection for the elderly. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.